Hi, this is Sean Hike, and you're listening to Stephen LeBron Radio.
Stephen
Radio.
Gather round.
Miami Vice, all my cocaine dreamers, you know, Miami Vice, push and spit this shit for y'all. Here we go, youngin' don't make my sales rise. I shoot you out your chuckers, push and hear the whispers of all you motherfuckers. Papa says stay free of them suckers, minus the wicked jumper, street baller like the Rucker. Skip to my loo if you looking for a couple, roosters in the duffel, keep the hood screaming cock-a-doodle-doo fuckers. Coke by the ton, rap niggas, I'm the one, with basic rhyme pattern, how the fuck you tryna chatter? Basic ass rappers got them running for their life. I philosophize about Glocks and keys, niggas call me Young Black Socrates. West Indies, bitch, drop the knees quick.
What?
With dreams of being a rich man's bitch. Feel sorry for niggas pull triggers and they shit click. So many bullets jammed in my shit, call me Left Fist.
Mama,
shake
I'm
the
so
diamonds
sorry.
Out my wrist.
I'm so obnoxious.
I don't fear Tubbs and Crockett.
Mama, I'm so sorry. I'm so obnoxious.
Got two hot rocks in my pocket.
Mama, I'm so sorry. I'm so obnoxious.
Big home palm trees and watches.
Mama, I'm so sorry. I'm so obnoxious.
My only accomplice, my conscience.
Young and learn from me. Let's not.
All right, welcome everybody. This is episode 23 of the podcast. As always, if you want to subscribe on iTunes, go to the store, look up Stephen LeBron Radio. You can follow me on Twitter at Stephen_LeBron. My blog, where I post all the podcast episodes and my writing, is at StephenLeBron.com. So today I have a return guest. If you've been listening to the podcast, he was on one of the earlier episodes. It's Sean Hyken from USA Today Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at SHykenNBA, SHIGHKINNBA. First round of the playoffs just wrapped up tonight. We're recording this on Saturday evening, right after the Game 7 between Brooklyn and Chicago. So I thought I'd have Sean come on, recap a little bit about the first round, ask him a couple questions about the upcoming round of the playoffs. So, Sean, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, for sure, man. So I told you just now, you're my NBA expert on this podcast. No pressure or anything, though.
I'll see what I can do.
I like to tell people, Sean Hyken likes to retweet Lakers fans on Twitter, but
I'm retired.
He's a lot more than that.
I'm retired.
Yeah, he's also the captain of Team Pierre, right?
This is true.
Yeah, unofficially. You just put a bid on the JaVale McGee jersey on eBay, right?
No, it is. It's official. I don't think there's anything unofficial with that.
Like, no one's going to dispute that, though, right? Like,
right.
If you actually claim that you're the captain, I don't know who's actually going to come and claim that throne.
Right.
Yeah, so he's not being cocky about it, I'm telling you. So first round of the playoffs just concluded. I'm going to hit you with a couple of questions. You let me know. Who is the most disappointing team in the first round, regardless of if they won or lost? Who disappointed you the most in the first round?
I'd have to say Denver, because yeah. I thought they were going to do a whole lot better. I think it's either Denver or the Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
Just because,
well, let's start with Denver. I got some questions about the Clippers too, but tell me a little bit about what you thought about the Nuggets.
Well, I didn't really understand a lot of the rotations that George Karl had going on. Like, he played Andre Miller a lot when Andre Miller was playing terribly, and I know that he like wants to trust his veterans, mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff, but it was just he made some substitutions that didn't really make a lot of sense. And I mean, I think they obviously missed Danilo Gallinari, but you know, Wilson Chandler played really well. And I also don't understand why Evan Fournier didn't get like any playing time in the series. Because he had played really well the last couple weeks of the season. When after Gallinari got hurt, they started starting him, and then once the playoffs started, they just completely went away from him. And I didn't really understand why they did that.
Yeah. Do you think that series is more of a product of, you know, obviously Steph Curry played really well.
Right.
They got a really good game from Andrew Bogut there in the clinching game, but
Bogut looked really good the entire series, actually. I was shocked. But he looked easily, I mean, it was easily the best that he's looked since the Warriors traded for him. And it was, you'd have to go back to like 08 or 09 the last time he looked that good in Milwaukee. But this is like, I was blown away by what they saw from Andrew Bogut. And I feel like if this is what the Warriors are going to get out of him going forward and he stays healthy, I think they're going to be dangerous a lot going forward.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, that was some vintage Bogut stuff going on there.
Yeah.
Do you think it was a product of just the Warriors, you know, obviously playing up to their potential or even beyond what kind of expectations was, or just Denver not meeting their expectations, or somewhere in between?
I think it was a little bit of both, but I think a lot about what Golden State did in that series was not sustainable. You know, Draymond Green is not going to hit three-pointers the way he did in that series. even somebody like Jarrett Jack, who's been a pretty good shooter this year, he basically, every time he needed to get hot, he got hot. And that's, you know, when they're playing San Antonio in the second round, I'm not sure that's going to keep up.
Yeah. What do you think about all this? The bigger story, obviously, after the Nuggets loss was about George Karl's career playoff record, how he struggled all these times to get out of the first round. Do you buy into that or no?
How many teams even make the playoffs?
If that's a real question, 16, but go on.
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like,
I know, I know.
Over the course of George Karl's career, like, how many coaches have even made the playoffs that many times? I don't think it's an indictment of George Karl as a coach, because I think he's a great coach, and I think it would actually be very short-sighted of the Nuggets to fire him. It's like, okay, like I said, I had some issues with the way he was handling some of these rotations, but, like, you know, they were missing Danilo Gallinari in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Draymond Green got ridiculously hot, Stephen Curry got ridiculously hot. I don't think that's, like, an indictment of George Karl as a coach.
Yeah, all this, there's a lot of talk, too. Like, the general, I don't like to use the phrase, but the general kind of narrative is obviously surrounding Denver is that, you know, they don't have that superstar, that go-to guy. I feel like Ty Lawson can be that guy, though.
I think he showed that in the series.
Yeah. Like, do you think going forward for Denver to contend, do they need to make any major changes? Or if they can get their core back healthy, this is a team that can sort of be a factor in the West for the next three to 4 years?
Well, I think the Warriors just happened to be the worst matchup they could have gotten. Mm-hmm. Any of those other ones, I think they matched up really well with the Clippers. And honestly, if they got the Grizzlies, if they were able to speed the tempo up in that series, I think they could have beaten them. I think Golden State just happens to be a really bad matchup because they have so many outside shooters, and the Nuggets don't really have any outside shooters.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, do they need to make any major moves, I can't think of one offhand they need to make. But, like, the thing about their roster is they have so much flexibility, and they don't really have any prohibitively bad contracts that they can't trade. So, like, if they ever are in a position where they could trade for, you know, a major star, they have the ability to do that. They have the assets for it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that team's built well. You think Josh Smith could fit in that team? I'm just throwing that out there.
So would Fareed come off the bench then, or will you play a big lineup where you play Smith and JaVale or Kufis starting, or would you?
Yeah, they have a little too.
Or would you play a smaller lineup would you play a smaller lineup where you have Fareed at the five or Wilson Chandler at the five?
Do you feel like they need Fareed and McGee? Like, do you think they could part with one of those? Like, if it was a trade that was going to happen?
Well, it depends on what they're getting back.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is, they didn't sign JaVale for what he is now. They signed JaVale for what they think he's going to be in 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's clearly shown. He started the last two games of the series, and he actually played really well, especially on the defensive end. He clearly has the ability to do that.
Yeah, I was surprised. He didn't start at all in the regular season, huh? Like, not one game.
Nope. Yeah. He didn't start until game five of the playoffs, and he played really well. And then he barely played in the second half.
Yeah, I don't really agree. I feel like McGee's ceiling is a lot higher than Fareed's.
It is. But the likelihood that he'll get there is also a lot lower than Fareed.
Yeah, that's true, too. I've always thought Josh Smith was an interesting guy to fit into that team.
You know where I think Josh... I mean, I think Josh Smith should go to Houston.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, Houston's an interesting destination for a lot of these guys. You were talking about, we can switch now to sort of recapping the Clippers-Grizzlies, you mentioned an interesting sign and trade with Chris Paul going to Houston today.
Well, I basically just think every big free agent should go to Houston. Because they have so much cap room, they're so well built. If Daryl Morey got Chris Paul, James Harden, Cork, if Chris Paul is so unhappy with the Clippers that he's trying to leave, they could do, you know, the Rockets could offer Jeremy Lin and like Mota Yunus or Terrence Jones or something to the Clippers. They get Chris Paul, they still have enough room to sign a max guy. So it's like then your starting lineup would be Paul, Harden, Parsons, Josh Smith, and Ashik. Yeah. Like, I feel like, is that a contender? I feel like that's a contender.
Do you think the Dwight Howard to Houston thing has any kind of realistic possibility to it?
I don't think he's going to leave the Lakers. I don't think he's going to leave that much money on the table just because he has these back problems. And it's so much more guaranteed money, and there's all the endorsement opportunities in L.A., and I know he's been miserable in L.A., but I just don't think he leaves that money on the table. But if he's going to leave, I think Houston makes a lot of sense for him, and like they could even... You know, they have a Sheik that they could offer the Lakers in a sign-and-trade along with one of their other young pieces, but, you know, obviously if you have the ability to go get Dwight Howard, you do it, but I don't think he's going to leave the Lakers. Before the Clippers were eliminated yesterday, I thought that it was a lock that Chris Paul was going to stay with the Clippers, and I didn't know if Dwight Howard would stay with the Lakers, but now I feel like, you know, Chris Paul might leave if he's really unhappy with the roster, and you know, I just don't see how Dwight leaves the money that he could get with the Lakers, and you know, the status of being with the Lakers. I think that's something he cares about a lot.
Yeah, I think a lot of times that actually the extra 20-30 million, whatever it is, that is the deciding factor for these guys, right?
I mean, that's a lot.
Like,
of money.
That's actually like, you know, like I know there's all the articles and like all the chatter that's gonna go on, but I feel like with the Dwight thing, I agree with you. At the end of the day, you know, I think that $30 million is just going to be the deciding factor.
Yeah, I mean, that's way too much money to leave on the table if you're somebody like Dwight, where, I mean, he's still, you know, theoretically he's still in his prime, but he just had a season where he really didn't look like himself at all because he had those back issues and shoulder issues, and we don't know how healthy he's going to be going forward. So if he can get more guaranteed money now, mm-hmm. It seems like it would be a smart move for him to do that.
Yeah, the Clippers situation is interesting to me because I feel like having watched this team, the core, the last couple of years, I don't know how far they can go, even though they have Chris Paul with the Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan front court. But I guess the one thing for me is that, you know, we're looking at Griffin as who he is now, but you assume that he'll be able to make some improvements going forward.
Well, I think Blake Griffin has become a terrific all-around player the last couple of years. I think he's become a much better defender. He was always a pretty good passer for a big man, but I think he's even improved in that regard as well. He's developed a lot of low-post moves on offense. And, you know, the criticism of him is usually all he ever does is dunk, and I feel like that hasn't really been true since his rookie year. So there's that, but there's also this, you know, this talk that's coming out now that he and Chris Paul don't really get along because Chris Paul is all business and he just wants to win championships and he's just really relentless about, you know, nagging guys to work on things. And Blake Griffin is, you know, younger and wants to have fun and isn't, you know, as much of a... He isn't as focused on winning right now as Chris Paul is. And so I've heard that.
Yeah, I actually read that.
I think it's true to an extent based on, you know, I have somewhat reliable information that actually is something that exists. I don't know if it's as much of a thing as people make it out to be, but, you know, that's definitely something that could be a factor if Chris Paul decides he doesn't want to play with him anymore.
Yeah, but don't you think this Clippers team, as they're currently constructed, like, this is about as far as they're going to go, win one round, like, at best?
Yeah, well...
I'm a very negative person that way. I like to just,
you know,
look at teams and say that they can't make the championship.
Especially when you think I don't think they are going to contend for a championship. They have stretches during the regular season where they just look unbeatable. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's the kind of thing where whenever you have Chris Paul as your, you know, your go-to guy, you just can't really bet against it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, their defense is so inconsistent and their offense can stagnate a lot, and it's the kind of thing you can't really trust for enough of a long stretch that you think they can make a deep run in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely a ceiling there. And I was just throwing out there yesterday, you know, Chris Paul would still look good on the Lakers.
That, well, I mean, there's literally no way that could happen.
Yeah, I know.
Even if they amnesty Kobe, they let Dwight walk, they trade Powell, I think they still don't have enough money to sign him.
Yeah, and I guess at that point, even if they bring on Paul, it defeats the purpose.
Right, like, at that point, you might as well just tank and try to get Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, don't you think?
By the way, that's totally happening.
Yeah, no, he's going, yeah. He's going to a team that you think he's going to, basically. The team that you think he's going to go to, he's going to go there.
Right.
The Thunder.
Yeah.
Is this the whole Westbrook thing now? You know, are they even in the conversation as a contender?
No. Just absolutely not. I'm actually shocked that they beat the Rockets in 6 games. I thought they were going to go 7 and then win. I think they're going to get torn apart. Memphis. Their offense is so bad without him. You basically, it reminds me of, you know, the Cavs offense the last few years that LeBron was there.
Yes.
You give it to him and you hope that he does something with it. Like, they have that, like, outside of Durant, there's nothing they can go to that's consistent. You know, even Ibaka has played really well in this series, but that's, you know, you can only do so much with that. You having two guys who are like big ball handlers like Westbrook and Durant, having two guys like that, that is such a threat. And losing Westbrook, and now it's like, okay, now you got to rely on, you know, Kevin Martin's a good shooter, but he's not nearly the ball handler or finisher that Westbrook was, or for that matter, that James Harden was. And this is where, and even though, like, I was somebody who sort of defended that trade at the time for Sam Presti and thought that it made sense, but this is where you wish that they hadn't traded Harden, because Westbrook goes down, you can slip Harden into the starting lineup and you're fine.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
without Westbrook, if you're only, you know, reliable source of offense is Kevin Durant, as much as he's, you know, the second best player in the league, if that's your entire offense, is basically give it to him and hope he does something, otherwise you're just kind of screwed. And Scott Brooks, I think this is kind of exposed Scott Brooks as a coach that isn't very good at making a lot of adjustments, because he hasn't really done anything differently since Westbrook went down, and you're kind of seeing how important Westbrook was to the team. But so no, I think they're gonna meet Memphis in the second round. Mike Conley is going to totally overmatch Reggie Jackson or Derek Fisher or whoever they give the point guard minutes to. They've got Tony Allen and Tayshaun Prince that they can throw at Durant just to keep a body in front of him. I think, you know, obviously Allen is somebody who can guard basically anybody on the wing, and Prince is not the defender that he was when he was in Detroit a number of years ago, but he can at least stay in front of Durant still. And then, you know, inside, obviously the Grizzlies have arguably the best front court in the league in Gasol and Randolph, and I think as good as Ibaka is, I think they're just totally overmatched there.
Yeah, I'm actually not. I wouldn't be surprised if that was a short series. Actually,
I picked them in 6, but that was because I felt like being safe.
Yeah, like I'm comfortable saying Memphis
totally
in 5.
Them in 5.
Yeah, Memphis in 5. I'm actually comfortable with.
I would be shocked if it went 7.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, Kevin Martin.
He's
very
a good shooter.
Streaky, very streaky.
He's not nearly as versatile of a player as Westbrook or Harden was.
Yeah. Don't you think this is kind of an indictment on Ibaka, too? Like, I think this series against Memphis, like, I want to see something out of Ibaka to say that, you know, he is a number 2 or number 3 guy on a contending team. Like, I feel like for the money that they gave him, the responsibility that they're giving him, he should be a 2010 guy.
I think that's a little bit unfair to Ibaka, because he's improved so much this year on defense. I still don't buy any of the talk that he should have been in the conversation for defensive player of the year, but he has improved a lot as a defender from where he was last year.
Yeah.
He's become more versatile offensively. And he's also, it's the kind of thing, like I said earlier with JaVale McGee, and obviously at this point Serge Ibaka is a much better player than JaVale McGee. They extended Ibaka because they know that in a few years where he's going to be developmentally, they're going to want to have him.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be unfair to him, because at the end of the day, at least for this playoff round, it's always going to be an Ibaka instead of Harden conversation.
Yeah, I mean, that's just sort of the media narrative of, oh, well, they decided to keep Ibaka instead of Harden. And that's not really his fault, but And honestly, the Thunder could have kept them both. And
shit, that's the, you know what, that's the nagging thing. Like
they could have, even if they were gonna, let Harden, even if they didn't want to give him the max money eventually, you could keep him this season, make another run at the title, and then, you know, obviously there are going to be teams that want to give him the max this offseason, so if you don't want to do that, you can work out a sign-and-trade and get something back for him. You're still going to get offers for James Harden.
Yeah.
Even if, I mean, you're going to get offers at least as good as the one they got from Houston if you wait until restricted free agency.
Yeah, I feel like Presti shopped Harden around, and then by the time he got the Rockets offer, it looked really good to him at the time.
Well, you can kind of see why it did, because, you know, everybody was still really hyped up on this draft from last year, and this is one of the best drafts in years, and so, you know, they got Perry Jones, who, you know, a lot of people said he had the talent to be a lottery pick, and he just kind of fell because of knee issues and work ethic issues and whatever. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Lamb, he was like, what was he, like the 12th pick in the draft or the 13th pick?
Yeah.
He was a mid-lottery pick in this draft, and, you know, so they got a pretty solid player in Kevin Martin. They got two first-round draft picks from this year, and then they got a future pick from Toronto that didn't end up being that great, especially since this draft is supposed to be pretty weak. But at the time, you were thinking, you know, that draft, that Toronto pick could be pretty good in the future, but, you know, it seems like that's going to be, like, what, the 9th or 10th pick in this draft, which is not a good draft. So in hindsight, that trade doesn't look good, but at the time, I thought it was defensible.
Yeah, and
they were really bent on not paying Harden and not giving him the max extension, and he really wanted that 5-year max. Mm-hmm. That they could have done a lot worse than what they got. They could have done better in hindsight, but I think the trade isn't something where you can say, oh, well, they completely just destroyed their core. Like, they got an okay package back. It's just, you know, maybe it just didn't work out, all the pieces they got back. Like, that happens. That's a gamble that you take, and you took that gamble. It's the same thing with on the other side of the equation, you know, the Sixers gave up a bunch of young players and a very solid veteran in Iguodala to get Andrew Bynum because they thought they were going to get a franchise player. And, you know, Vucevic and Mo Harkless have really developed in Orlando and become really, you know, really promising players that I think are going to be, you know, rotation players in the NBA for a long time. And Andrew Bynum gave them nothing, but it's still like, you know, you take that gamble if you're the Sixers.
No, yeah, I think they would make that trade.
As it is, it's not going to go anywhere.
They would make that trade again today.
Yeah, absolutely. Like if Bynum had been healthy, that trade is totally worth it. But it's like, and you know, they knew that he had knee problems going in, but it's like, okay, we can either, you know, be what we were the last couple of years, a team that just, you know, gets into the playoffs as an 8th seed and gets swept by Miami or whoever. Or you can, you know, take a swing at getting a franchise player that they're not going to get otherwise. And if it works out, then, you know, you have that guy. If it doesn't work out, you go back to the drawing board. Like, that's not the worst thing in the world to me.
Yeah. You know, Presti made a pretty bold move because, Regardless, if the Thunder don't win the title, and obviously it doesn't look like they will this year, there's always going to be that second guessing about this year. Like, he's stuck with that, right? Like the fact that he didn't go with this playoff run with Harden.
And on the other hand, Daryl Morey was made fun of for so long because he was always seen as like this, you know, really ahead of his time in a lot of ways in terms of embracing these all the analytics. Like, he was one of the first basketball guys to do that, and he always had all these guys that were like, oh, well, these are really, you know, value-based assets. And people were just like, okay, yeah, wait until he does something with it. And now it's like, oh, he just went out and got James Harden. And now he's got a bona fide superstar that you can build around. Like, there you go. Like, this is what he was doing the entire time. He still has a ton of cap space. He can still add pieces. I think the Rockets are going to be a top 4 seed next year if they do well in free agency.
Yeah, it's pretty funny because the backlash against Morey was at its peak during the offseason last year when he just stripped the whole roster.
Well, because he basically was trying to get as many picks as possible because that's what Orlando wanted for
all the Dwight Howard.
Then, like, Dwight Howard's agent basically just leaked to the media that there was no way that Dwight would ever sign an extension in Houston or re-sign with Houston.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that changes. Like, I know that Dwight didn't really want to go to Houston, but that was before the Harden trade. I wonder if Harden being there changes anything. I doubt, like I said, I doubt he goes anywhere besides re-signing with the Lakers. But If he goes anywhere, I think Houston is pretty high on the list of possibilities.
Yeah, well, logically, just looking at the on-court, like, the combinations, like, Dwight to Houston makes a lot of sense. But, man, that $30 million is hard to give up, man.
It is.
Like, that's the deal-breaker. But, you know, it's interesting. Like, Houston's rebuilt now where it feels like, you know, if they just go with their current roster, like, they're definitely a playoff team, obviously, going forward. But it really feels like they're just one player away from really being, like, leaping into that conversation.
Yeah, if they can get Chris Paul or get Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
Or even if they can sign, like, Josh Smith and Andre Iguodala. Like,
yeah.
Can you imagine, like, if the Rockets signed Josh Smith, nobody is scoring at the rim against Smith and Ashiq.
Yeah, that would actually be so interesting. Yeah,
and
on defense.
The other thing is that the Rockets are so good at developing guys into three-point shooters who weren't. Because Patrick Patterson, when he was drafted out of Kentucky, wasn't a very good outside shooter. And then he became one when he got drafted by the Rockets. Like, I feel like there's a possibility that everybody always makes jokes about how Josh Smith, like, shoots threes, and that's, like, the Hawks fan's worst nightmare. Yeah. I feel like there's a chance that if Josh Smith goes to Houston, he'll suddenly become a 40% three-point shooter.
No, it could happen.
And then he'll just be impossible to guard.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's one of those things. And the Thomas Robinson thing, you don't know. He might develop into a useful player, too, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, they didn't really give up anything for him.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing where, like, you hate to use the whole, you know, saying, like, what pick the guy was. But, you know, he was the fifth pick in this draft. And, you know, he got no chance to develop or play at all in Sacramento. And, you know, obviously the Kings are just a terrible organization at this point. And the Maloofs do everything just to save money. And, you know, thank God they're going to be out of the league soon.
Yeah, no, this Houston thing, you know, if I'm drinking
you know,
the juice...
If
yeah.
you're Daryl Morey, you can get him for, like, Patrick Patterson in a second-round pick, and you have him, like, because the other thing is, like, it's also, like, a cost analysis. Like, I know Patrick Patterson is a really good player, and is somebody that you don't like to give up, but he's in his third year. He's going to get paid soon. He's going to become a lot more expensive, whereas Thomas Robinson, Daryl Morey trades for Thomas Robinson. He's got a young power forward on a rookie contract for another 3 years now after this one.
Yeah.
So that just keeps a lot of that flexibility, and that's somebody, if they feel like they can develop him the way they develop Patrick Patterson, if Kevin McHale feels he can do that, I think that was definitely a really good move for them.
Yeah, you know, Morey's smart like that, because if Robinson develops into a good player, it works two ways. He can either be a good player in the rotation or just a great trade chip for him, right?
Right, like, you could. I feel like he could still flip Thomas Robinson and get something for him if he wanted to right now. He could, you know, that could be another piece. Like, if he were going to do a sign and trade for Chris Paul or Dwight Howard, that could be, like, one of the, like, in the same vein as, like, Mota Yunus or Terrence Jones, or, you know, if Royce White has any value to anybody left at, you know, him. You know, Thomas Robinson is another guy you can say, oh, yeah, we could throw in Terrence, we can give you, like, Terrence Jones, Thomas Robinson, and Ashiq for Dwight Howard.
Yeah, yeah. No, man, this Chris Paul to Houston thing, I really want it to happen, though.
I know, right? Like, basically,
did you start this? Did anybody else talk about this, or just
I wrote
you?
About this back when they on like the day they made the Harden trade. I wrote a thing on Proxism about, like, I think Daryl Morey, I think he has another shoe that still has to drop, and I think, see, this was before, like, the Clippers were really good in the season. I figured, you know, I thought that the Clippers would take a step back and Chris Paul would want to leave. Yeah. I didn't think the Clippers were going to be as good as they were, and so I thought, you know, what if Chris Paul wants to leave? The Rockets suddenly, they have a pretty intriguing set of assets they could offer. And so then suddenly, you know, you have a Chris Paul and James Harden backcourt, and you still have a ton of cap space and a ton of young players you can still throw around. Like, I felt at the time that they made the Harden trade that Morey still had this other move that he could make, and now it's even looking more like he still has that he could pull out of his back pocket.
Yeah, no, because the Ashiq and, like, the Lin contracts, they're very tradable, too.
Those are, that was genius, the way he just sort of structured those contracts just to make it literally impossible to match for the Knicks and for the Bulls without going into the repeater tax. But there's so, like, any, if you can get a player like Ashiq, like, there are so few good, you know, big men like that left in the NBA. And to have one on a, like, making less than $10 million a year, that's, if any time you can do that, and even the Sheik was kind of limited offensively, but he was so good defensively with the Bulls, and clearly that's been sustainable with the Rockets, because he's been, you know, easily their best defensive player, and he's actually gotten a lot better offensively, too. You can get that for 8.7 a year or whatever, yeah, that's those were both terrific moves for him. And Jeremy Lin is somebody that, you know, is always going to be intriguing, and teams are always going to trade for him, even if he has kind of a down year, just because, you know, he's somebody that's a big name, and he's somebody they can market. But, you know, Jeremy Lin has, I think, ever since, like, he left the Knicks, he has proven that he is, you know, he's a starting quality NBA point guard.
Yeah. You know, the thing about the Rockets, you look up and down the roster, you can't say there's one guy that's really overpaid.
No, because basically, except for Harden, Ashik, and Lin, basically all their guys are rookie or minimum contracts.
Yeah, well, Parsons is, like, ridiculously underpaid.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, Parsons is going to get paid, like, after next season, and it's going to be totally worth it. That guy's going to be an all-star at some point, I think. Like, yeah. I'm a huge Chandler Parsons fan.
Oh, his ceiling is very high.
Yeah.
Very high. Well, unfortunately, I'm going to have to move to the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, the East is not as interesting as the West, to put it mildly.
Well, like I've been saying.
I mean, it's like, okay, like, it's just, there's nobody that is going to, like, the Knicks-Pacers series is going to be interesting, but, you know, no, Miami just, it's, unless LeBron, like, loses the ability to walk, it's like...
Yeah.
I just don't see any way Miami doesn't come out of the East fairly easily.
No, well, like, I was saying, Miami's going to win the title.
Yeah.
Like,
I'd be shocked if they didn't. I think out of any team in the West, the team that could give them the most trouble is Memphis, but that just means maybe the Heat win in six instead of winning in four or five.
Yeah, I think Memphis is one of those teams, especially with their bigs, and Conley too, right? Like, I think Conley could give them a bit of trouble if he keeps playing this way.
You still have to bet on the Heat because the Heat have LeBron.
Yeah, I think Grizzlies are good.
It comes down to that. It's like, you know, LeBron is so much better. Like the thing is, like, that this is the thing. Like, Durant is so good, but it's not close.
Yeah.
Like, the LeBron, like, he's unguardable. He can defend all five positions at an elite level. He's unselfish.
Yeah.
He suddenly is a 40% three-point shooter for the first time this year. I don't know how that happened, but now it's like, oh, by the way, LeBron is now a really good outside shooter.
Yeah.
So you just, to me, LeBron is already like the sixth or seventh best player of all time, and he's 28, and he's only going to get better.
Yeah, you know what it is? Like, you know, the gap between LeBron and Durant, it's weird. Like, sports is weird like this. Like, the fact that LeBron is so much better than everyone else, it almost gets to a point where people just don't appreciate what he does. There's no comparison.
I wonder how many, this is the thing, like, because he just won he's about to get his fourth MVP tomorrow. He's about to officially be presented with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, he's won four, he won two in a row twice. I personally think he should have won it the year that Derrick Rose won it in 2011, but I don't think there was any way the writers were going to give it to him because of...
Oh, that was all the media backlash.
Right, like, they wanted to punish him for the decision, even though... I think he and Dwight Howard both had better seasons that year than Rose did, but, you know, that's a totally different discussion. I'm not going to try to take anything away from Rose because he had a great year, too, and I miss him, and I...
A lot of people miss him a little too much.
But at the same time, like, LeBron is 28. I don't see him stopping this anytime soon, and even though Durant is 24 and he's only going to get better, I feel like it might be kind of a Jordan thing where LeBron... You know, like, where Jordan, like, kept basically an entire generation of guys like Karl Malone, Clyde Drexler, and Charles Barkley, and Gary Payton from winning championships.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know Drexler won two championships the two years that Jordan retired to play baseball, but, like, while Jordan was in the league, all these great Hall of Fame players never won titles just because he was there, and it was just prohibitive, and I feel like you look at, you know, Kevin Durant, you look at Carmelo Anthony, you look at Chris Paul, and all these other guys who are future Hall of Famers. The fact that LeBron is there and he's doing what he's doing, I think that's just, it's the same kind of thing where, you know, him being there is basically going to stop them from winning MVPs and winning championships.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. But we're still going to have to pretend to care about the East.
Right.
You try to get your way out of it. I'm actually a little interested in the Knicks-Pacers series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely the more interesting of the two.
Yeah, I want to find out, because I think Indy's defense might do some work against that New York offense, because I was not that impressed with New York's offense, especially in the last three, four games there.
I wasn't either. I don't know why they went away from you know, playing, having Melo drive to the basket and doing pick and rolls with Chandler, but they basically just iso Melo the whole time, and that's something that has been proven to be ineffective, and especially if, like, if the Knicks aren't finding open shots in the perimeter, and Melo and Chandler don't have the pick and roll working, they basically, their offense is very easy to stop, and Indiana had the best defense in the league this year.
Yeah.
And their offense is good, and like, I think Paul George, he had a couple of rough games early in the series against Atlanta, but he has played a lot better, and you know, I think if Chandler's been good, but he has not been, I don't think he's fully healthy, because he has not been as good offensively or defensively as he was last season.
And yeah, that, he doesn't seem like an impact player when he's out there.
He doesn't. It was kind of, it's so weird, because he was so good last year in places during the regular season, but he's just, I don't think he's fully healthy. I think the knee stuff and the neck stuff is still bothering him. But, you know, you've got that. Like, I think Roy Hibbert, as, you know, as inconsistent as Hibbert has been offensively this season, his defense has been top-notch all year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like Kenyon Martin. I really like what he's given them. Mm-hmm. But I think David West, I don't think they have an answer for David West. And then it's like, you know, Paul George, I would probably take Paul George over Ray Felton as you know, your starting point guard, even though Felton has been pretty good in this series. I think Paul George is more consistent. I mean, not Paul George.
Oh, George Hill? Yeah.
I'm sorry, they have one guy whose last name is George and one guy whose first name is George.
You gonna blame them?
Yeah, like it's their fault for having a confusingly constructed roster with guys with similar names. Yes,
we will allow that.
Yes, I'm comparing Paul George to a point guard.
You like George Hill more than Felton?
Yeah, George Hill, I think, has been really, you know, under the radar. You know, because there's so many good point guards in the NBA that right now that guys kind of get lost, and I think George Hill is one of those guys who gets lost. And he's really solid. He's just, if he's your starting point guard, you're great. You're fine.
Yeah, I think the Knicks just walking this really thin line where, you know, obviously high volume shooting from Carmelo and J.R. Smith, and they have a couple of other guys too. And, you know, it's just, I really think that's just it. It's just a hit or miss with them.
Did you see the tweet from J.R. Smith tonight that he was at the 40-40 club last night?
Yeah.
Or tonight?
I feel like he has such a great individual season. And then everything since that elbow to Jason Terry, he's coming back to earth a little. This is the J.R. Smith that we know.
Yeah. Personally, I would have given Sixth Man of the Year to Jarrett Jack.
Yeah, you know, the Sixth Man thing was kind of a timing thing, I feel like, right?
Right. Like,
J.R. had that huge...
He had an incredible first month and a half of the season where he was shooting, like, 45% from three and 55% from the field
for
the first like month and a half of the season, and then, you know, he had a really good last 2 months of the season, and, you know, okay, he shot under 40% the rest of the way, but people remember how we did in the beginning and at the end, and he plays for the Knicks.
Yeah,
I'm not going to completely begrudge him the award, because, you know, he did have a good year.
Yeah.
And he was really good in the first few games of the playoffs, but, you know, I just...
I feel like the Sixth Man, and especially the Most Improved, they should just make that a Most Improved team. And just give that to five players.
I don't know about that as much as, like... I think they kind of got both of them wrong. Well, it depends. Like, how do you feel about guys winning Sixth Man of the Year who aren't on good teams?
Yeah,
statistically,
yeah.
and all that stuff. I think the guy who had the best case to win it, just purely in a vacuum, not taking into account that he plays on a terrible team, is Ryan Anderson.
Yeah, no, that's
anytime you have a power forward who shoots, you know, 40% from three on seven attempts a game, rebounds that well, and is a really good defender coming off the bench.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Those awards are only going to give to the guy that comes off the bench for a good team, right?
Right, and I think Jarrett Jack was more... He's basically like... He's sort of the opposite. He and Steph Curry, I think, complement each other really well, because Curry is more of a shoot-first point guard, and Jack is more of a conventional point guard that is a good facilitator and can also shoot.
Yeah, well, that's what I think the Most Improved thing. Like, you know, you mentioned Jack. Obviously, Jamal Crawford got a little buzz about that, too. J.R. Smith, Ryan Anderson, really good one, too. You know, just have a Most Improved first team. Save all these arguments.
Right. If I were to, you mean like a most improved?
Yeah, like a most improved.
Oh, wait, you
first
were saying?
Team.
I thought you said like give like pick a team second unit that was the most
improved. Oh no!
You're talking about like all defense or all rookie,
exactly.
By position.
Exactly. Just give
so
that
you,
as a
so
whole.
So you would team. Have what would you have? You would have.
Or you like, know what? For most improved, you don't even need or six man. You don't even need positions. Just the top five guys. Name them on the first team. Because it's so.
I
kind of
feel like it would be interesting to do a most improved team by position. Like for six man, I agree with you, but for by position, like
yeah, most improved.
My position for most improved, I feel like is something they could. That's actually a really good idea. Like I feel like I mean, this year you would have Grievous Vasquez as your point guard.
Yeah.
Because that's a guy that was like not even a rotation player last year, and now he's actually like a quality starting point guard.
Yeah.
He was a throw-in in that Quincy Pondexter trade.
Oh yeah, that trade was so under the radar. Yeah.
Right, and like he was basically a throw-in. They basically like, gave up a second-round pick, and they were just like, "Here, you want Grievous Vasquez?" And they were like, "Sure, we'll never use him." But then they played him this year, and he became a quality starting point guard.
Yeah, no, the most improved, because the thing about most improved is, number one, it's a lot of guys that come out of nowhere. Vasquez is a very good example. Number two, sometimes, you know, like a Paul George, right?
Or well, listen, I kind of feel the way about Paul George, the same way I felt about Ryan Anderson winning it last year, and it's like Ryan Anderson was putting up the same numbers the last part of the season before he won most improved, whereas somebody like Paul George is also like he was really good, he just was playing fewer minutes because Danny Granger didn't blow out his knee. Like I feel like these guys who go from really good to great and just play more minutes, I feel like that is not really the best use of most improved. Somebody like, you know, this year I think Vasquez would have been a better choice. Or if you're going to pick somebody on the Pacers, what about Lance Stephenson? That was a guy that was like, should this guy even be in the league? Like, he was like a terrible basketball player
yeah.
the last couple of years, and now he's a contributing player who actually plays a big role on a team that's, you know, the best defensive team in the league and, you know, the third seed in the East.
Yeah.
I think that's more impressive to me than Paul George, who was already a really good player, playing more minutes because Danny Granger got hurt, and now people are just like, he was really good last year, people just didn't know about it, and now people know about it, and that's why he won most improved. And I feel like the same thing was true with Ryan Anderson, whereas last year, I would have probably given it to Nikola Pekovic, because it was also, you know, it was the same thing where it was a guy who, like,
mm-hmm.
his rookie year, people just didn't, you know, the Wolves signed him, and he just wasn't very good, he didn't really play that much, you know, the Wolves were just a complete mess, and then last year, he emerged as somebody who, you know, he was one of the better offensive centers in the West, and, you know, he's somebody that people hate to guard. He's a great rebounder.
Yeah, yeah, that's why, because the most improved thing, like, if you're going to boil that down to just giving to one person, it's too hard, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's way too hard. Like, the other guy that I was pushing, too, just because I'm from Toronto, too, was Amir Johnson.
Yeah, I think Amir Johnson had a great year. That was somebody who was always like, okay, he's serviceable backup big
yeah.
man, but... Yeah, I agree with you. I think he made a lot of improvements this year.
And that's the thing, like, it's impossible for Amir to win that award. Like, he's going to get a couple of votes, but if you break it down into a most improved first team, second team even, right?
What about Nicholas Batum?
Yeah, yeah, no,
he kind of, he fell off, like, halfway through the year because he was basically playing through a wrist injury, but yeah. when you compare what he was doing this year as a passer, I think he's gotten better as a defender, and he's also he's just become a much more diverse offensive player under Terry Stotts than he ever has under Naismith. But that's the other thing, it's like he's a better player now because Terry Stotts' system in Portland allows him to be. Nate McMillan was basically just having him spot up in the corner, so it's like how many of these things you'd have to look at, like how many of these guys become better players when they get different coaches who have systems that are more of a fit for their offense
yeah.
or for their style of play.
Yeah.
I think with the Pacers, you know, it's more of a thing because, you know, Frank Vogel was the coach both of those years. And, you know, this, something must have happened with Lance Stephenson where he basically went from being almost useless as an NBA player to being very good and very serviceable.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, I think all those awards, because I know, I mean, you know, like everyone loves to argue those when they come out, right? Like everyone has their own opinion. And like, I think a lot of that could be settled if they just break that out into full teams.
Well, here's the thing. I agree with people who think that awards are pointless.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, a lot of times they can decide, like, somebody's place in history. If you are looking up, you know, if you're, like, trying to make a case for a player after he retires, whether, you know, he's a Hall of Famer or not, or when
yeah.
you're trying to give somebody a contract and you're like, okay, well, what has he accomplished? having been on an All-NBA team or having gotten, like, a second-place MVP finish or having won Most Improved or Sixth Man, that's something they can factor into that. And so it's something I think voters shouldn't take lightly because it does have a financial impact on these guys and on, like, how they're viewed and whether they get into the Hall of Fame in a lot of places. Which is why, you know, people who... You know, Luke Babbitt got a vote for Sixth Man of the Year.
Did you?
And I'm
that?
Just like, whoever did that should not be allowed to vote in these awards because that's just like.
Didn't Jordan Crawford get a Sixth Man vote?
Well, that was a little bit more explainable because
that's a typo.
They did it in like a. From what I was told, I don't have a vote in these awards, but from what I was told by people who do that I've talked to. Is that you submit it as it's like a drop down menu, and so Jamal Crawford and Jordan Crawford were right next to each other, so that's how that happened.
Okay.
And that's the same way that like Brooke Lopez and Robin Lopez both got votes for Most Improved.
Did they ever find out who voted for Luke Babbitt?
No. I did find out that it was not Mike Rice.
Okay.
The Blazers color commentator who was the first person you would think would vote for Luke Babbitt for something.
Does
like
anyone
that.
Else in Portland have a vote?
There are a few people that have a vote.
Because you figure it's going to come from Portland, right? No way it's outside of Portland.
Well, okay, does anybody... media members in cities that have NBA teams, right?
Right.
Because I was thinking, because there's nobody in Reno, Nevada, because Luke Babbitt played at UNR in college. Like, it could have been somebody like that that voted for him, but it's like if you vote Luke Babbitt missed like got 20 DNPs and he played like 5 minutes a game when he did play. If you actually like watched the NBA this year and you think Luke Babbitt was the third best Sixth Man of the Year, like, you should not be allowed to vote in these awards. Like, the fact that Zach Lowe doesn't have a ballot and whoever gave Luke Babbitt a vote does have a ballot, like, that's not right to me.
Yeah, well, you know, that speaks a lot to your point earlier about how much these awards actually mean anything, right?
Well, right, and there's the kind of thing where, you know, you want them to just be, you know, stupid things that people argue about for a day, but they do matter. They do decide, you know, the trajectories of some of these guys' careers in terms of what kind of contracts they get and where, you know, whether they get in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
this
no,
stuff
that's
is not
a...
the only factor, but it's certainly something where, you know, you can say... If there's somebody who's like a borderline, I'm trying to think of a player, but if there's somebody who's like a borderline Hall of Fame candidate where you don't know if he's going to get in, you can say, oh, well, he made the all defensive team this number of times. This is like a tie, and use that as a tiebreaker if you are undecided about somebody.
Yeah, and a huge negotiating point for agents, right? Like, say your guy goes to free agency, he just won the Sixth Man.
Luke Babbitt's agent knows whoever gave that guy, whoever it is that gave him that vote. So much. Like, he owes him a fruit basket or something. Because Luke Babbitt, like, his agent, when some team is trying to sign Luke Babbitt, he can be like, hey, you know what? My guy got a third place vote for Sixth Man of the Year, and now...
That first slide get... on the PowerPoint, man. On the PowerPoint,
like, put that on a PowerPoint. Like, you know, have, like, the Chalupa shot on one of them, the Dougie on one of them. That one time he grew his hair out and had that photo of him, like, his hair flying all over the place. Put that on there on one of the slides of the PowerPoint. That time that, like, he, on the Jumbotron, he was asked Beyonce versus Rihanna, and he said neither. Like, I feel like that's something you want to, like, put on one of his career highlights.
I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, he did. Luke Babbitt only listens to worship music. He only listens to gospel.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's 100% true. He only listens to gospel music. That's
I think it's good though that, you know, sometimes I get really annoyed at all the pointless arguments about these awards, but the people online, like with the whole basketball community, is good because people who don't get these awards are still getting recognized for what they did.
You mean like because they put out the award
Yeah, no, like when people like say, you know, I think say if 10 years ago when you put out the Sixth Man of the Year award and you give it to J.R. Smith, I think a lot of people would not even recognize what maybe a Jarrett Jack or like you mentioned a Ryan Anderson did.
Right, but like before the internet and before like League Pass where people could watch every team, people only know about like the teams that are on national TV. So, you know, the Knicks are going to be on national TV a lot and so they'll see J.R. Smith and...
Yep.
You know, he'll get Sixth Man of the Year, and people will be like, oh, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
But then, you know, maybe people didn't watch the Warriors as much or the Hornets or whoever.
Mm-hmm. But now even though these other guys didn't win the award, I feel like people still appreciate what they did.
Oh, what about Larry Sanders for Most Improved?
Yeah, no, for sure. That's why, man. They gotta have that first team. There's too many guys.
I actually really like that. That's actually a terrific idea.
Because you cannot, especially when it's most improved, you cannot pin it down to one guy. So many guys make a jump, right?
No, I totally agree with you. I had not thought of it about like that before, and I think that's a great idea.
And even I would make a case for John Wall the last couple months.
You just sort of see how valuable it is, because the Wizards were five and twenty-six when he came back, and then when he came back they were an above 500 team.
Yeah.
So I think that right there just shows you how good he is and how valuable he is, and I think they're gonna have, if they have him and Beal back for a full season next year, and they at least sign a couple of quality value guys. That's a team I think could make a run for an 8 seed.
Oh, for sure. For sure. This is how boring the East playoffs are, right? We've actually gone towards the Wizards.
We're talking about the Seriously, though.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind you of that.
this is ostensibly a playoff preview podcast, but we're talking about, first team all most improved, and whether John Wall can make the Wizards a sleeper 8 seed for next year. Your Eastern Conference playoffs, everybody. Yeah.
Somehow you slipped in a whole Luke Babbitt conversation during.
Yeah, an anecdote about Luke Babbitt not listening to Beyonce or Rihanna. That's totally relevant to the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Well, continuing on the East preview, can you give me any idea if anyone's gonna take Andrea Bargnani? I'm serious. You laugh.
I understand the pain in your soul.
I'm actually offended by that laugh, but go on.
No, I think that's I understand. Yeah, so in the playoffs this year, in the Knicks Pacers series, I think that the Minnesota I don't know why I just went to Minnesota, because that's terrible.
I don't even do that whole trade machine thing, but there was one day when I was doing the trade machine thing with Bargnani, and it was impossible.
You can't do it unless the Lakers can somehow be convinced to take him for Powell, but even then it's why would the Lakers do that?
I want to propose this to you. You can laugh if you want, but the most realistic thing I could come up with was some sort of trade. I don't know who else we threw in, but a couple of contracts with Bargnani to the Wizards. In return, we take Nene's contract and Jan Vesely.
If you want Jan Vesely, then.
Hey, listen, for 10 minutes there, honestly, I was talking myself into Jan Vesely, which made me realize how low this has gone.
Well, yeah. By the way, the best account on the entire Twitter is Jan Vesely's stats.
Yes.
So he's got that going for him. I'll be so disappointed if he ends up being good at some point in his career and that Jan Vesely's stats account actually starts posting stats that are respectable instead of 5 minutes, 0 points, 0 rebounds, 0 for 5 shooting, 3 turnovers, 4 fouls.
I think for the longest time this year, he had more fouls than points. I think that was
It was really sad that he couldn't keep that up the whole season. I'm pouring out a 40 of something for him.
Yeah. All right. Just so people don't blame me for misleading them. So Heat versus the Bulls, I'm thinking that's a quick series. I think the Bulls can hang with Miami, but not for 4 quarters at a time.
No. And especially because they're not healthy. Noah was so great in this series, but he's playing on one foot.
Yeah. Man, what Luol Deng went through sounded brutal.
Luol Deng is leaking spinal fluid. I don't know how much he's going to be able to stay in front of LeBron James for 48 minutes.
Yeah.
And you know that if he's active, Thibodeau is going to play him for 48 minutes, even though he just had the spinal tap procedure.
Oh, yeah. Thibodeau has no regard for human life.
I think the one...
That's actually his tagline.
Yeah. By the way, shout out to no regard for human life for being a saint. But... Yes. Basically, the only hope that the Bulls have is Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
That's a guy that actually, legitimately can guard LeBron for stretches. But
Butler reminds you of Josh Howard when Josh Howard was good.
Yeah, that's actually a really good comparison for Jimmy Butler. I'm a huge fan of Jimmy Butler. I think he's going to be a really good player.
There's another most improved first team, first, second team.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, how much is it really fair to give most improved things to somebody who improved from their rookie year to their second year? Because you expect somebody to be better after their rookie year.
Yeah, I'm just trying to push my most improved idea, man.
No, I'm totally on board with the most improved idea, and I'm a huge Jimmy Butler fan, so theoretically I should be
yeah.
Well, on listen, board with what you're saying. But
listen, the Bulls, you know, they won one game against Brooklyn because of Nate Robinson.
I don't think that's going to happen again.
Like, yeah, so, like, there's a lot of things that have to go right just for it. See, that's the thing when you're talking about teams going up against Miami. Even when you mention Memphis, it's like, if everything goes right, maybe it can be a six-game series. Like, it's not even maybe they can win.
Like, right.
It's yeah, this whole Miami thing, I mean, just, yeah, it's a wrap.
They're so good.
Yeah, so
I don't think that LeBron is going to re-sign in Cleveland. Why would he leave Miami?
Oh, my God, this is like the 10th straight podcast this has come up. This is unavoidable.
I know it is, but it's like, we have to, like, we were talking about just how, you know, how much of a roadblock Miami is for everything else. It's not just, you know, LeBron and Wade and Bosch, like, all fitting under the CBA. Like, no, like, Shane Battier and Ray Allen are not going to take way below market value to sign with LeBron in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Spoelstra is such a good coach, and he's not going to go with LeBron to Cleveland, especially because, like, they just hired Mike Brown back.
Yeah.
Like, I personally don't see any way he leaves.
Oh, no. I think the LeBron's going to re-sign with Miami. This is like a 99% thing, but people are going to harp on the 1%. They have to, right? Like, it's, you know.
Oh, yeah, him, you do. Yeah.
But him going back to Miami is the most boring. There's nothing to write about if it's just writing about LeBron returning to Miami. And, you know, the Cleveland thing is going to get a lot of buzz, obviously. I'm
Unless
sure
he
the,
goes
La-
to the Lakers.
Oh, yeah, the Lakers thing is going to get a lot of buzz.
That's
I'm
not
sure.
going to happen. There's no way.
No, he's going to stay in Miami. That's it.
There's no reason for him to leave.
The Cleveland thing makes no sense. Like, he has everything to lose and nothing to gain going.
Why would you leave Pat Riley for Dan Gilbert?
Why would you leave, you know, like, you know, I'm, why would you leave Miami, you know, living in Miami?
Why would you leave Eric Spoelstra for Mike Brown?
Yeah.
The Heat have basically perfected how to build a team around LeBron. You put LeBron out there and you just surround him with shooters. So it's like, you can double LeBron, but, you know, then you've got either Ray Allen or Shane Battier or Mike Miller just open in the corner and you can knock down anything.
Yeah.
And you've got, you know, Chris Bosh, you can also just, like, he can stretch the floor. He's a pretty good outside shooter for a big man, so he creates a lot of mismatches.
Yeah. No, that's true, man. So you're thinking Heat, probably be a, I say Heat in five.
I'll give the Bulls credit. I'll give them one game. But yeah, Heat in five. Yeah. It's not going to be close.
Knicks, Pacers, hard for me to pick.
I think Indiana wins in seven.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with Knicks in seven.
It's going to go seven.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as with, like, the Clippers-Grizzlies. I know the Clippers-Grizzlies series went six,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't go seven. I thought it was going to go seven, but it's the kind of series where both teams have such – you can make a case for both teams.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to, like, I like Indiana's defense lately more than I like although, you know what, Indiana's defense kind of laid an egg a little bit in that Atlanta series. I don't know what that was about. But on the whole, what I've seen out of Indiana's defense versus what I've seen out of New York's offense, I think I like Indiana more.
Yeah, can't wait for Amari to come back game three, man.
Oh, my God.
There's going to be a lot of stories
That's
there.
The worst. If Amari comes back, I think it's going to be Pacers in five. But
you know, Amari's going to come back just in time for the Knicks to lose a bunch of games. That's how it happens with these guys. It's ridiculous.
I know they should. I know Tyson Chandler. I know they had to amnesty Billups to get Tyson Chandler, but so stupid and short-sighted of them not to save the amnesty for Amari.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah. Man, Amari's first 40 games there in New York was great, but that was it.
After the Carmelo trade, he fell off a cliff.
Everybody
on that Knicks team fell off a cliff. Remember Landry Fields was good at one point?
Landry Fields. Yeah. He lives in my condo, fun fact.
does he really?
He does.
Think he mentioned that. He looks, I saw him up close at Summer League last year. He was just sort of there watching stuff.
Yeah.
He looks so much like Drake.
A little bit. I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. It's
like,
a little
they just,
bit,
like,
yeah.
Hang out all the time in Toronto, probably.
Yeah, I don't know.
So do other players like hang out with him at your condo, or
The only other guy that I know lived here before was Jose Calderon.
Nice. Yeah. So you must live in a pretty nice building if NBA players are living in it.
It is okay. Let's not turn this into a personal life conversation.
No, but like, I'm actually really curious now. Like, how is, like,
it's very close. And listen, it's very close to all the arenas here downtown.
Have you had any interactions with Landry Fields or did you with Jose Calderon?
Two elevator trips with Landry Fields.
And did you talk to him at all?
Yeah. So the first time I didn't really talk to him because I'm stupid. Like, I put my head down sometimes when I'm in the elevator. I did not realize I was in the elevator with him the first time until I was just about to get off.
Right.
Like I looked up and saw him and I was like, oh, hey, what's up, Landry? Like, that was it. Second time, it's funny. I was with my friend walking towards the elevator and I was like telling him, I was like, hey, you know Landry Fields lives here? And then he was standing right there, like right when we turned the corner. And then he was like, oh, speak of the devil, I'm right here. And then I asked him if he still talked to Jeremy Lin. He's like, yeah, once in a while. And then there was a Linsanity documentary happening at Sundance Festival. And he's like, yeah, they filmed a bunch of scenes with me, but they cut me out.
Well, they didn't really want him. They just wanted the couch, right?
Yeah, exactly. So then, no, I had a brief conversation. Yeah, but that was pretty much it. J.E. Skeets from Basketball Jones lives in my building.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I see him. He recognizes me once out of every three elevator trips. You know, the crazy story is I went to New York for a comedy show once, and I sat down, and he was right there next to me, Skeets.
You didn't know he was going to be there?
No. Huh. Yeah. And then I was like, you know, we live in the same condo as well, right? He mentioned it on one of the TBJ shows. They called me a creepy fanboy. Who stalked him in New York. I'll send you the episode and I'll send you the time that you should scroll to. That
yeah, please. I actually really want to see that. That's really funny.
Because Tass Malice was like, whoa, that's creepy. He's stalking you? Yeah. So.
Well, yeah. The Basketball Jones guys are great. And I actually went to the wedding that happened because of an engagement on the Basketball Jones.
Madison?
Yeah, I went to Madison and Amy's wedding.
That's awesome. No, they're good. Skeets has my number. He's supposed to call me to play ball, but I think it was one of those gesture things.
I see you just putting Skeets on blast and just calling him out.
I know, man. I'm going to tweet this link right at him. No, Skeets, man. You're cool. This is how bad the East playoff preview is.
Eastern Conference.
Yeah, we went from what? Let's recap this. We went from Babbitt, we had a Vesely shout-out, Bargnani trade machine, and just personal stories about J.E. Skeets.
And Landry Fields.
Exactly. Okay, rest of the predictions, and then I'll let you go. So we both agree that we think the Clippers are just going to take care of business, right?
The Clippers?
Oh, my bad. Grizzlies.
Yeah, I think the Clippers aren't going to be. I think that's a pretty bold prediction if you think
the Clippers. I'm going to say the Clippers will not take care of business.
The Clippers are not going to get to the Western Conference Finals. That's a bold prediction right there.
Vinny Del Negro will download the Team Stream app.
I forget who said that. That was like the funniest tweet I've seen.
You know what? It was the honorable me.
That was you?
Yeah.
That was one. I think that was probably the best tweet that I've seen in the playoffs.
I also think he plays checkers on a chessboard. I'm trying to think of all these ridiculous things that he would do. Yeah. You gotta get all your Del Negro jokes out. He's not gonna be there next year.
That's the thing. And it's not like, right, like George Karl, if George Karl gets fired, there's gonna be teams like banging down his phone is gonna be blowing up with teams wanting to offer him a job. I don't think teams are gonna be falling over themselves to hire Vinny Del Negro.
Yeah. George Karl reminds me of, like, a Rick Adelman type. Like, people will go after him, always. Yeah.
A guy who's, it's like somebody who's like, okay, like, you know, he underachieves at various places, but he's a really good coach, and he's always going to be thought of as a really good coach.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. So, okay. I slipped up, but we got to make some Del Negro jokes. Grizzlies are going to take care of business.
I think six. I think five, but I'm going to give Durant a little bit of credit and say six.
Yeah, and lastly, we didn't even touch on this, so you can make any points you want about Spurs Warriors. Any chance?
Well,
Warriors?
I see you with your Freudian slip thinking.
I know. You know what? I'm staring at all the teams right now. That's
thinking that JaVale McGee.
I'm staring at all the first round matchups.
You're just wistful that JaVale McGee is not going to be in the playoffs.
Andre Blatch and JaVale McGee almost had a chance to trend at the same time the other day.
Somehow the Nuggets and the Nets had gotten to the finals against each other, you'd have the Andre Blatch and JaVale McGee.
Oh my god.
If they had both started, like if Brook Lopez got hurt and they had to start Blatch at center.
That would be crazy.
You'd have Andre Blatch versus JaVale McGee The entire world would melt.
Yeah, well, I obviously don't know who the hell's in the second round, but Spurs-Warriors, is there any way the Warriors can win this series?
I think they win a game off of momentum at Oracle.
Yeah.
I don't think anything about their shooting in the first round is sustainable. Mm-hmm. The Spurs have had a full week of rest. And, you know, for a team like the Spurs where, all their guys are with Miami, it's like, okay, they had a full week of rest. They're fine. LeBron, that's it. It's not going to change anything. They'd be just as dominant if they were playing on 2 days rest. But the Spurs, like Duncan and Ginobili and Parker, there is that age and the health issue.
Yeah.
They actually need the full week. And, like, Tiago Splitter might be healthy again. So,
he's going to be good enough to come back to start the series?
What I've heard is that he might be.
Wow.
But, you know, if Manu plays like he did in the first round,
yeah,
and Tony Parker is healthy, Unless Draymond Green is actually suddenly just a really good shooter consistently, and that wasn't a fluke, and I feel like that was a fluke.
Yeah.
With Bogut, I was really impressed with Bogut in the first round. I think Duncan is going to be a handful for him.
Yeah, I read a stat. Duncan's like 47-6 or something against the Warriors all time.
The Warriors have never won in San Antonio since Duncan was drafted.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. And so now we're saying, is there any way he's going to win the series? Especially if David Lee played like 5 minutes yesterday.
Yeah, David Lee was a motivational appearance.
Right. It was like, you know, it was the kind of thing where it wasn't like, you know, Brandon Roy coming back from that knee surgery or Ron Artest coming back, Meta World Peace coming back from a knee surgery. It was like, I mean, the hip flexor thing is like the worst thing that's going to happen is he's going to re-aggravate the same injury and then he misses the year. It's not a thing where it's going to like jeopardize his career. So like, I get why they wanted to give it a go, but clearly he's not going to be able to play.
Yeah.
And not having David Lee out there against San Antonio where they have Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so that one's going to be like a five game.
It's going to be a Spurs Grizzlies conference finals.
Yeah, that's going to be fun though.
I think so. I predicted before we even started the playoffs, I predicted that Memphis was going to make it to the finals.
Yeah, even against a full you predicted that they were going to beat a full strength OKC team.
Yeah, they took them to 7 games 2 years ago and
yeah.
Like, they match up really well. Like, I feel like the one team the Grizzlies... I was actually sort of worried when they drew the Clippers. The one team that the Grizzlies don't match up that well against in the West is the Clippers.
Yeah, no, that's true.
They
yeah.
match up really well against the Thunder because they have such an advantage in the paint with Gasol and Randolph. And, you know, they've got... You know, Mike Conley is a pretty good defensive point guard. Like, not really very many people can stay in front of Westbrook, but if anybody can, it's him. And they have Allen and Prince that they can, you know, stick on Durant. And, you know, I thought the Thunder were going to be missing Harden, and they are. So, like,
yeah,
even at full strength, even if Westbrook was healthy, I think the Grizzlies match up really well against the Thunder.
Almost feel like there's just, like, a unanimous consensus that the Grizzlies are going to win the West now.
I was on that before anybody. I'm just going to throw it out there.
No, I'll give you credit for that. But it's just, I feel like maybe the home court advantage will matter when they play the Spurs.
I still
could
like.
Could be.
I still like the Grizzlies in that matchup. I think I trust their defense more than I trust San Antonio's defense. They were both top five in the regular season, but
yeah,
you know, over a series, I think I would trust Memphis more than San Antonio.
Yeah, it does feel like Memphis is rounding into one of those zones where like they're very comfortable. They know what they need to do to win.
I think they're
like
just
they have a formula.
I think they're peaking at the right time. They looked awful in the first two games of the Clippers series.
Yeah.
like Zach Randolph was just a complete non-factor. You know, Conley wasn't shooting well. Yeah. Gasol was playing well, but like Prince wasn't really doing much. And you know, Tony Allen got in foul trouble, but like they seem like they're right at the right time. They're clicking. I think they're going to handle OKC. I think they're still going to be in this zone when they get to San Antonio.
Yeah. Okay. One last thing. Most player that most impressed you or made you look at them differently from the first round? Because I'm going to say Mike Conley.
Well, I've always been kind of on the Mike Conley train ever since his season after he signed that extension, and people like my former boss, they made fun of the contract, and then he came at and ended up being a really good player.
Yeah.
I've kind of been a Conley fan for a while. But
was there anyone else in the first round that kind of, you know, the way they performed, either good or bad?
Count Andrew Bogut?
Yeah.
We knew Andrew Bogut was this good when he was healthy. We just haven't seen it in like 4 years.
Yeah, I am shocked the way he played in the first round.
I think Bogut is definitely someone you look at there. I think Nate Robinson, you sort of have to look at him a little bit differently. I did not think he was ever going to have like a meaningful playoff series like this.
Yeah. On the flip side, was there anyone that really let you down? That made you think about him differently the other way? If there's
Andre
no one, it's fine.
Andre Miller.
Yeah, Andre.
Andre Miller. Chandler Parsons, for another person that really impressed me, even though the Rockets lost that series. We talked about this earlier. I think he has a very high ceiling. I think he's going to be a good player for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I can't really say Blake Griffin because he was hurt.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the Pacers-Hawks series, I'll be honest.
I'll admit to not watching that much of that series either.
I was on Twitter last night asking for a Yelp review of the series. Jared Wade gave me one.
Oh, Jared Bayless I thought was really good in the Clippers series.
Yeah, the Grizzlies bench, they're actually okay.
Bayless is a guy I've kind of followed for a while.
Pondexter.
Yeah, Pondexter. Pondexter's another guy that can defend wings. Like, we sort of forget about him because Allen and Prince are bigger names, but Pondexter's solid as a defender.
Yeah, so.
You
gotta give me a disappointing guy.
Okay.
Avery Bradley was disappointing until that last quarter.
Is it cheating to say Dwight Howard?
Well, you can't say Dwight.
Andre Miller is one.
Dwight, you're saying?
Yeah, Dwight.
I'm gonna say Avery Bradley too.
Yeah, I think Avery. I think it's fair to say Avery Bradley. Knicks, Pacers, Heat, Bulls, Nets.
Yeah, those might be the only
guys. Joe Johnson's not healthy. It's not really fair to say him either.
Yeah.
Oh, Gerald Wallace was kind of having a pulse late today.
Yes, compared to the regular season.
Gerald Wallace has been awful this season.
Yeah. What a trade.
Yeah.
Good for you guys. Good for Portland.
Right.
That was crazy. All right, no more disappointing guys?
Nah,
I think that's good enough.
You know what? What team am I missing?
Heat, Bucks.
I guess it's not really fair to say that Brandon Jennings and Monte Ellis were disappointing.
I think they were kind of who they were.
Yeah. What about JJ Redick? Because I feel like it wasn't as much he was disappointing as I don't think he... I just don't like the way Jim Boylan has used him.
Oh, ever since the trade, I don't think he's been used correctly, right? Like, since he's been there.
Right.
And that Redick trade looks like a steal that they got Tobias Harris.
Oh, yeah. See, this is another thing. Like you people killed Rob Hennigan, the Magic GM, at the time for that Dwight trade because, you know, the
when I thought it was brutal. I thought it was brutal.
I kind of did too. I kind of tried to rationalize it a little bit.
Yeah.
I think the thing that's still indefensible about that trade is that all the first round picks they got were like lottery protected.
Yeah.
I still think that was bad, because if you're trading Dwight Howard, you got to get unprotected picks back.
Hey man, at the time, I think a lot of people were looking at it as if Aaron Afolo was the main player that they
got. Right, because when the Nuggets traded Carmelo Anthony, they got Danilo Gallinari and Wilson Chandler, and those guys have both become really good players. When the Clippers got Chris Paul, they traded Eric Gordon, which, yeah. I mean, you know, maybe that hasn't worked out so great, but like... Looking at it in hindsight, especially once you see like how little the Sixers got out of Andrew Bynum, it's like, okay, so the Magic are rebuilding, they're recovering from Dwight Howard basically forcing his way out of town. You think they would have wanted to deal with the Andrew Bynum drama all year?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like every single player that that Rob Hennigan has drafted or traded for since he got there has been a legitimate NBA player. Because if you go down the list, Tobias Harris is really good. Nikola Vucevic, Mo Harkless, Andrew Nicholson was a really good draft pick. Kyle O'Quinn showed some things kind of at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I think the one thing, if the Magic could do this over again, the thing that I think they would regret more...
Jameer Nelson contract?
Yeah, I kind of get that, though. Like, they wanted to have one guy that was, like, a veteran, and, like, the contract was, like, half guaranteed for the last year. Like, that's, like, that wasn't ideal, but that was fine. The thing that I think they shouldn't have done was let Ryan Anderson go.
Yeah.
Especially, like, he's making, what, 8.5 a year? That's perfectly reasonable money for him.
Well,
and, like, it wouldn't have even... They have so much cap space. Like, once, like, they got rid of Jason Richardson in the Dwight trade, they're going to be able to waive Hedo this year and Al Harrington, and so those contracts are going to be, like unguaranteed for most of them. They're going to have a lot of money next summer when, like, everybody's a free agent. And that would be true even if they had kept Ryan Anderson.
Why would they give the money to Jameer and not Ryan Anderson? Because Jameer was a free agent this year, right?
Yeah.
This past off season.
Yeah.
It seems like if they had to pick between the two, would Anderson not be a better building block, right?
I think they did it because they wanted to have one guy that's like a veteran presence, that's like a connection to the old Magic team. I don't fully understand the rationale for it. I would have been fine with that if they had given him a little bit less than like $8 million a year or $6 million a year or whatever they gave him. But
I don't think Orlando fans would have been up in arms if Jameer left, though.
That's the thing I don't understand. I think they gave him like $6 or $7 or $8 a year. What was the market for Jameer Nelson? Who else is going to give Jameer Nelson that much money?
There's
so many good point guards and so many good backup point guards. At this point, Jameer Nelson on a good team would be a backup.
Yeah. Well, I guess what Orlando basically did was they just didn't value Ryan Anderson properly.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean that's a mistake you make, and like that happens. There are all the time people will let guys go and then regret it later, but like. Yeah. But, you know, I think Rob Hennigan has done enough good things, and he's got plenty of pieces. And, you know, they're going to – this year, if they get the number one pick this year, they take Nerlens Noel. He might not even play next year because of the ACL, so they'll still be terrible.
Yeah.
And so then, like, if they get the number
one – They get Wiggins.
Or the number two pick. Like, if they get Andrew Wiggins or Jabari Parker or somebody in that draft class in, like, one of the top three picks, then they have him and Nerlens Noel coming in at the same time. If Noel sits out next season.
Yeah.
And then they still have, you know, they have, like, Vucevic and Harkless and all these guys that they have already, and, like, Tobias Harris. If they get Andrew Wiggins and build around it with, like, those kinds of role players that are going to be really inexpensive for the next couple of years, it could be, like, an Oklahoma City situation where they just have a really good homegrown core, and, like, they're going to have to pay some of them at some point, but, you know, they'll still have a lot of flexibility. Like, I think they have a pretty good situation. They have a good future there in Orlando.
Yeah, I feel like if they... Yeah, like you mentioned, if they just hit on the next couple drafts...
Right, and
it's just like OKC.
High enough, it's going to be kind of a no-brainer. Like, this draft is so weak anyway that you can take Nerlens Noel with the number one pick and be like, okay, we know he's not even going to play next year, but we don't care because we're trying to tank for Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, that would be like a perfect like double whammy for them, actually.
Yeah.
That would be perfect. Yeah. All right, Sean, I'm gonna let you go because I feel like we could talk ball for another 10 hours.
this was great. Anytime you want me to come on.
Listen, man, you make a promise right now. Like, come back on after the end of each round.
Absolutely, yeah. Anytime.
Yeah. All right, we'll do it, man. Okay, I'll talk to you soon. Okay.
All right.
All right. See you, man.
All right. Bye.